Hello again, everyone. Bernie Miklas back with you here on my YouTube channel, The Bernie Show. Please subscribe. Tell your friends, family members, fellow sports fans about The Bernie Miklas Show here on YouTube, because as baseball gets closer and closer, I'll be ramping up for the start of the new season with some other features that I'll tell you about at another time. But I appreciate very much all your support, and that includes the comments you leave at the end of the videos when you're compelled to comment. I learned some things with that, and appreciate it. Also, hit the like button, and I'll quit begging now, okay? I'll get to work, as much as this can be considered work. I'm going to start something new today. It's kind of a series of commentaries or analysis of the Cardinals as they get ready for 2025. And my point or my purpose is to kind of break it off into smaller pieces instead of like doing 45-minute videos or whatever. I can cover more ground that way. They'll be easier for you to digest. I think by doing shorter videos, you know, I'll have more of a chance to do two of these each weekday rather than one, although today will not be one of those days because I got off to a late start. But anyway, let's begin. With the Cardinals busy at work in Jupiter, it's never too early to think about what's in store for their 2025 season. I'm not going to make any predictions here about the team's final record. Like, I mean, what's the point of that? It's premature. We're going to have plenty of time to get a more accurate reading on the Cardinals before they start to play real baseball on March the 27th. By now, we know that the external projections are ominous for 25, and based on the forecasts, the baseline that I recognize is about 78 wins. I'm not saying I'm predicting 78 wins. What I'm saying is that's based on the projections. That's the baseline. Can they go over 78? Can they go way over 78? Will they stay the same? Will they be under 78? That type of thing. 78 is the baseline. It's up to the Cardinals to exceed that 78 baseline if they can. And they are the ones that are feeling really positive about their team from the front office on down. The players fired up, managers fired up, everybody seems to be fired up. But then again, it's spring training. Who the heck isn't fired up? So I'm going to try to take a lot of cynicism out of this and just play it straight, which I always try to do, but not getting too hung up on the cynicism. To be taken seriously as a playoff contender, the Cardinals probably going to have to get to 87 or 88 wins. And yeah, there's a lot that depends on what happens in camp, because there can be new developments. Will there be any serious injuries? What about some pleasantly unexpected surprises? Like, I was listening to Ali Marmol today talk about Tekoa Robey, like the pitcher that they got from Texas in that deal that sent Jordan Montgomery there in the deadline of 23. And Robey, for example, has had a hard time staying healthy. So I'm not about, you know, ready to proclaim him to be a Cy Young candidate or whatever. I'm just being silly. But he's got talent. And in the early days of camp, I think the Cardinals brass is really excited by what they see from Robey. But it's February the 19th. We got a long way to go to the finish line. But again, it's always cool. I like stories about younger guys making an impression and sort of like putting themselves in a position to contend for a roster spot or just get themselves in the mix for usage, maybe a lot of usage in 2025. And see, this is what I'm talking about. I'm just using him as an example. All right. You know, so what about surprises? That's something I'll talk about as camp goes on. What about roster additions? I doubt it. We all know what the ownership front office policy is on that. Will the Cardinals make smart roster and lineup decisions? I don't know about that either. We'll see. By the time camp is about to break, we're going to have a lot more information to work with and to go on. But as we keep in mind that the combined Pecota and Fangraphs projections, have the Cardinals finishing with about an average of 78.3 wins. And this kind of sets me up to take that day-by-day look at some of the situations and questions that will go a long way in determining what the Cardinals' fate is in 2025. And so, as I mentioned, I'm going to try to break these off into smaller videos for easier absorption. That also means I hope I will be able to do two of these per weekday. but not every day. And there are other sports I want to, you know, go into. And it's a busy time of the sports years. But the Cardinals, I promised that this channel, this YouTube channel of mine, would be heavy on Cardinals content. And that's what I've been trying to do. And I want to be consistent in that area, because even though people are upset with the team and all that, this is still very much a baseball town. All right, here's the number one situation or number one question, however you want to frame it. That's fine. You'll know what I mean. Number one, will the Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman show be a smash hit in 2025, or will it be similar to a 2024 season that resulted in both of those dudes being demoted to the minors? My confidence level on a scale to 1 to 10, and I'll, in each one of these categories, I'll try to give you a confidence level reading, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10. I'd say I'm about a 6.5 on Walker and Gorman, and I'm probably trying to be a little conservative. I'd rather be on the conservative side as far as what I think is going to happen. There's just no point of me, like, going bananas and acting like, oh, these guys are just going to kill it this year. No, we're going to need to see them do that. I'll get excited if early in the season they come out swinging and put numbers up. But I don't want to turn this exercise into me being fake, you know, Mr. Fake Optimism guy. I don't want to pump sunshine all over the place. I think you know me better than that. But if I see something that I legitimately like, if I see something that I think is a legitimate reason for hope, I'm happy to talk about it and relay it to you. I get tired of the extremes in sports talk and sports culture, because there's way too much gray area in sports. And that gray area usually determines how a team or a player will go, because you've got these things that are right in the middle and they can tip one way or they can tip the other way. That's what I'm talking about. First of all, I do think Gorman and Walker will do better in 2025, which isn't saying much, because I don't know how you could do worse for this offense than they did last year. Pardon me. For this offense to really fire up, crank up, and be something more than a liability, and then turn and score a lot more runs in 2025, it ain't going to happen unless Walker and Gorman can perform at minimum to their 2023 levels. And in a best case scenario, they would even do better than that. So there is no reason to talk about how horrible these hitters were in 2024. We know it already. That's well established. It's facts that are entered into the record. There's no reason to rehash it. But I do have some reasons for some confidence in their turnaround, because I haven't forgotten about what they did, each of them, in 2023. You know, 2023 ain't that long ago, right? You know, it's not like I'm talking about, you know, 2016 or something. Listen, in 2023, Walker was 21. Gorman was 23 years old. Walker had made the jump from spring training, where he went right from AA to the minors. The Cardinals had him bypass AAA, which I think turned out to be a mistake to a point anyway. But that's debatable, and it's not something I feel like arguing about. But Walker made the jump from AA to the majors at age 21. Gorman made his major league debut in 2022, as you remember, and he went into the 2023 season. He had 313 major league plate appearances at that time. So you're talking about two really young guys, and you're talking about one guy, Gorman, who had little experience, relatively little experience in the majors, and another guy, 21, who had literally no experience coming into his first major league season. And so please listen to these numbers, and I'm not going cuckoo here. I'm just going to give you the stuff that I think tells a story and is based on facts. Despite their age and inexperience, here's what Walker and Gorman did collectively. You put both of their performances together. Here's what they did collectively on offense at a very young age and very little major league experience. All right. First of all, they had 929 plate appearances and 826 at-bats between them. The batting average was .257. That's fine, because if you look at the way major league batting average keep going down and down and down, the industry standard has changed. A .257 batting average is nothing to be ashamed about or criticize, in my opinion. To me, it's a lot more about on-base percentage and slugging. So speaking of that, those two guys collectively had a .332 on-base percentage. That's good, considering they're rookies with little experience. That's good. They had a .461 slugging percentage. Again, rookies, age 21, 23. I think Gorman actually was a second-year player. But in 2023, the point is it was a young player with not that much experience. Sorry if I mischaracterized it, not intentional. Anyway, .461 slugging percentage between them. I think that's good. A .793 OPS, that's good. And they had a combined OPS, which is an OPS plus, I meant to say, combined adjusted OPS, that was 14% above the league average offensively. And that's good. Here's why I say that's good. Because I went to FanGraphs to do a little research, and I learned that in the 2023 season, major league hitters age 21 through 23, which is the Gorman-Walker group at that time, they collectively had an OPS plus of 95, which is 5% below the major league average, meaning that the Gorman-Walker tandem, they were 19 points above the league average for that age group. I think that's good. I think that's really good, actually, because, again, not everybody can be Bobby Witt Jr., right? Walker and Gorman combined for 43 home runs in 2023, and when you average it out, they hit a home run every 19 at-bats. I think that's good. The walk rate was just under 10%. I think that's good. Gorman's walk rate especially, which was well over 11%. It's good. Their combined strikeout rate was almost 23%, which is still about 5%, close to 5% below the overall league average for young hitters. But even though Gorman bombed 27 homers and slugged .478 2 years ago, his 31.7% strikeout rate was too high, and we all know that he needs to lower that. For a young hitter, the test, and this is as old as baseball itself, for a young hitter, the test is always about adapting and adjusting after pitchers identify your weaknesses and begin to pick at them. Gorman and Walker did not do that last season, but the Cardinals freaked out about Walker. They sent him out really early. You know why? Because they didn't know what to do, because they didn't have a batting coach who could fix the problems or even understand the problems, probably not being able to relate to young hitters all that well, although the Cardinals had a really good young hitter last year, Mason Wynn. But I think Mason Wynn does a great job of figuring stuff out on his own. We know what Gorman has to do. I've been over this. I don't want to bore you with it again. But in short, he's got to stop chasing so many pitches out of the strike zone. He needs to punish strikes more often instead of looking at strikes. And he needs to get back on top of putting a charge into four-seam fastballs, which he would struggle to do as a rookie. But in 2023, he did it pretty well. And last year, he absolutely collapsed with the high fastballs in the strike zone. I mean, the numbers were pitiful. With Walker, of course, it's all about staying away from those low and outside pitches, or at the very least, swinging at them in a way that protects the outside part of the plate if it looks like it's going to be a strike. And there's nothing wrong with going to the opposite field. I don't want to see Walker going to the opposite field all the time. He's not a slap hitter. This is a guy with tremendous bat speed and exit velocity, and he's strong and he hits the ball hard. But it's good to have a defense mechanism when it's a pitch that you won't be able to drive, but you can just kind of shoot it in the right field if you're a right-handed hitter. I think that's one way for Walker to control the strike zone better. And the other thing, of course, he needs to hit the ball more in the air, more frequently and on the ground less frequently, because that's a big, big part of his profile that's got to evolve and change. Walker actually made progress last season. I was surprised to find this out. The way he handled change-up, sliders, cutters, curves, he was about the same, maybe a little less effective against sweeper pitches. But Walker really, really relapsed when confronting fastballs, and that was a glaring difference between 23 and 24. I'm happy to explain. In 2023, Walker pounded four-seam fastballs for a .349 average and a .651 slugging percentage. I mean, you know, he's kind of built like the Hall of Famer Dave Winfield. I mean, those are like Dave Winfield numbers, right? And I hope you all remember who David Winfield was, right? A heck of a hitter, a large man too. But last season, again, 349 and 651, 349 average and 651 against four-seam fastballs. But last season, he hit 222 against four-seam fastballs. And even though he did have a good, you know, he had a good on slugging percentage against them, 444, but that was way down from 2023. And wow, this is the one that made me go, whoa. It was even worse against the sinker, that pitch that, as we know, usually tails low and away from him, or it did last year. In 2023, then this is what fascinates me, because there's such a radical difference. In 2023, Walker batted 289 with a 421 slugging percentage against a sinker. That's a nice job for a 21-year-old rookie. But last season, because I think he lost confidence and I think he just got too jumpy, you know, and he was swinging it too much, Walker was all but helpless against those sinkers. You know, he hit 111 against sinking fastballs last season without an extra base hit and a 19% hard hit rate. It was just the epitome of failure. And they just kept throwing that pitch over and over and over again. So he's got to, if he can get back to close to what he did in 2023, he's going to be on his way in terms of handling that sinker ball. But a 19% hard hit rate last season against that pitch. You know what his hard hit rate against the sinker was in 2023, that rookie campaign? 43%. So he's hitting that pitch hard, man. Last year, the very definition of weak contact. So it isn't, you know, it's really not difficult to identify what Walker has to do, what Gorman has to do. It's just a matter of doing it. I'll say this, and this moves into kind of part two of what I wanted to talk about, because it's just not Walker and Gorman alone. I just think they happen to be really, really important to the fate of the 2025 Cardinals and maybe even the direction of the franchise going beyond 2025. I think Walker's early work with the new hitting coach, Brant Brown, has been really helpful. Walker has changed his problematic batting stance. He's brought his hands down a lot lower to be able to turn on the ball with more success. That inside pitch doesn't have to travel all the way down so much. He's ready to load and deliver. And having the hands down, as I said, will help him ward off those low away pitches that are in the strike zone. Because you can't get to him if you're starting from way up here and have a long swing. I'm no batting coach, but even I know that. He's also, in, you know, and by dropping his hands and changing how he positions his feet, the way Walker explained it at the winter warm-up is he's going to be able to kind of front-load his swing and do a better job of that and get more drive, which increases power. So I think he's starting to figure it out. And Brant Brown is one of the reasons I have more confidence about these two young guys turning things around. Brant Brown really likes to work with young hitters. He can assimilate technology-based information in a way that's easy for hitters to understand. Brown does not have outdated ideas. In fact, he's very much at the forefront of information that can be really valuable for hitters as long as you know how to explain it in a way that's simple to understand. And he seems to have that skill. He is not impatient with young guys and who are struggling, and he will not give up on young guys who are struggling. And frankly, I think we saw, whether it was intentional or not, I think we saw some reasons to think that the hitting coach kind of gave up, threw his hands up. I don't know what to do with these guys. And that's why he's no longer the hitting coach. I think Brown is kind of the personality type, and his ability to work at this at several different ways is really helpful, because not all hitters are the same. Just like no human being is the same. Some of them you have to teach certain things and do it in a different way than you would some other guys, right? Brown, the thing that I keep coming back to, and I know when they hired him, you know, people looking for the negatives, talking about, oh, boy, the Mariners fired him. They didn't even give him 2 months. I don't really give a damn what the Mariners did. I said that at the time, and I'll say it again. I don't give a damn what the Mariners did. The Mariners are a joke, and they're a chronic underachiever offensively who can't figure out what to do to have an offense that can back up that excellent starting pitching that they've put together. And they just keep swapping out batting coaches and blaming other people, the fact that they haven't put enough talent together. And maybe the Cardinals haven't put together enough talent either offensively, but at least they're not going to stay the course with an outdated, kind of batting coach view of how you do things in 2024, 2025. At least the Cardinals are going forward, and they're going forward with someone who is a forward thinker, but not so esoteric with gobbledygook that hitters have no idea what he's talking about. Here's what I keep going back to. Let me complete what I was going to say. He developed as a hitting coach during his 5 years in the Dodgers organization. And the reason that gives me confidence in him is because that, frankly, and to me, obviously, is the smartest organization in Major League Baseball. They prepare their young kids. They draft well. They develop well. Their young hitters come up and contribute, and they fit in, and they know what they're doing. They have their best shot for early success. And a lot of that has to do with, pardon the expression, the Dodger way. The Dodgers are they're just so smarter than most teams, if not all teams. So that's one of the reasons that Dodger background. He served them in a number of hitting coach capacities for 5 years, including teaching all the kids that were making their way up. To me, that's exactly the type of guy the Cardinals need to have. Brett Brown is an early hit in spring training, and you can roll your eyebrow. You can roll your eyes. That's all right, because spring training, everybody's positive, everything's great, everybody's great, all that. That's kind of right of spring training. That's a ritual that's been going on forever, right? But he has certainly raised the standard, and he has raised the energy, and he has a lot more hands-on, direct approach. He kind of knows what each young hitter, all hitters need, because all personalities, as I mentioned, are different. When Walker was at the winter warm-up, I think the media were just stunned by how fired up and enthusiastic he was. Like, he wanted to talk about hitting. And Walker's first 2 years in the big leagues, it's like he didn't want to talk about hitting because he was frustrated all the time. But it looks like Brown's unlocked some things that's got Jordan Walker just bubbling about hitting and explaining what he's doing and what's going to be different. And it isn't BS. This is a guy speaking from the heart. And you say, wow, he must have hit it off really well with the new hitting coach. I know he feels that way. And that's that kind of Brent Brown style, I think, can make guys like Walker and Gorman better, make them see the light. No more of this easy rider stuff. Brown puts hitters to work. He doesn't put them to sleep. He puts them to work, and it's smart work. Major league hitters, young or old, want good coaching. They don't resist it. Even guys who are well-established, they don't have this attitude. It's like, well, I know what I'm doing. Major league hitters are obsessed with the craft. They always want stuff that can help them. Manager Ali Marmol was asked about Brown on Tuesday, and this is what he said, and I quote, and I'd like to read it to you now. Ali Marmol said about Brent Brown, quote, incredible. He's an absolute maniac when it comes to preparation. And I mean that in a positive way. He really cares about the player going into a game, knowing exactly what to expect, they're about to experience, and having the tools in order to execute. Marmol said, quote, but the way he communicates with players, he speaks different languages. If the hitter is a feel guy, Brown can talk through it that way. If it's a highly mechanical type of hitter, Brown can go through the biomechanics and the swing. If it's a hitter who wants to simply talk about approach, Brown has a really good sense of how to communicate that. Marmol continued, quote, the feedback has been incredible. He's got some energy. He doesn't tolerate mediocre preparation or mediocre mindsets. You're not going to go into the cage and just feel your way through it. You're not going to go in there and not be fully committed to showing up with a real purpose of, hey, here's what I'm working on today. If you are walking into the cage, Marmol said, and you're just taking some swings to get loose, you're not going to be in there very long. I mean, Brent Brown's all about the work and striving to get better and putting things that everyone agrees would be good for you, putting those things into practice. Now, again, let me just say this. It's understandable to be skeptical about this because it's spring training. It's a time for happy, 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 happy talk. I also think we all make too much of a fuss, including me, over the batting coach. A hitter's talent is still the most important thing in determining whether he's going to be good or bad or somewhere in the middle. And maybe the Cardinals don't have enough talent. You could argue that they don't, or at least they have talent, but the talent has not reached its full potential. And again, how many young guys has to struggle and see the Cardinals trade them elsewhere before they take a different approach in terms of the hitting coach and what's being taught? I think the Cardinals have enough talent to do a lot better off than they did offensively in 2024. Again, I ain't saying much because they were pretty bad offensively in 2024, but they do have talent to lift that up. But whatever was going down in 2024 was not working, simply was not working. Hitters got worse instead of better. There was a lot of malaise. Young hitters drifted. No one could pull them back up. Turner Ward, I'm sorry, I said it before. I said it while he was here. So I ain't saying it now that he's gone because I said it when he was here. Turner Ward was basically hired by Paul Goldschmidt. He was Goldie's personal batting coach. And even Goldie slipped dramatically last season in terms of just the basic statistics. It was technically, factually, the worst season of Goldie's offensive career in all the years he's been in the majors. You know, we're all really tired of seeing Cardinals hitters drift into slumps without having a coach who knew how to help get them out of it. Hey, maybe the hitters didn't listen enough, or maybe the hitters didn't take things to heart. Maybe they didn't work hard enough. Like I said, there's plenty of blame to go around, but what I'm trying to say is we're talking about a couple of guys in this case who are still really young and still, especially Walker, still quite inexperienced. And for whatever reason, the old school bull spit didn't work. It was time to go with something different. And Brown is very much different. That's a plus. So for anyone who's skeptical about this, I understand you. Tip of the cap. I get it. I'm skeptical about a lot of things myself. But this is a fresh start for these hitters. They have a fresh voice with fresh ideas and a fresh vision. I don't see how that can be viewed as a bad thing. Will it be a good thing? I think so. How much of a good thing? I don't know. But I think it'll turn in the right direction. Thanks for watching The Bernie Show here on YouTube. Please add your comments because I'm always interested in what you have to say and appreciate you very much. Have a good rest of your Tuesday. Thank you.